welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Rod Oram this morning. Morena, Rod, how are you?
Rachel, very well, thank you.
It's lovely to have you on the show. We're talking about everything from the National Party shadow cabinet through to climate change this morning. But I did want to start by touching on something that's been in the headlines in the last week, which is around the Parliamentary Oath of Allegiance, which is something that all the new MPs and returning MPs have to swear on when they come into Parliament. And it currently recognises the Queen, but there is no recognition of no recognition of titidity, and that's been something that's come up a lot in this new term, particularly from the Māori Party and also from the Green Party. There's been quite a bit of a pushback against that. What are your thoughts around this? Because it is something that has come up in the past before, but maybe we're at a moment where we're starting to see a conversation that could turn into some actual change here.
I hope we are, because it would make great sense to have the treaty have that role in parliamentary oaths and elsewhere, because it is such a central document. My sense of it is that the discussion has revived again and will keep coming back, and in due course we'll eventually get there, just in the same way that we will eventually be a republic, I could imagine, and people such as Helen Clark, when she was Prime Minister, and Ardern now, think that the latter is inevitable at some point. So I think that that recognition of the pivotal role of the treaty will get into the oath. And what I am, and indeed you see that in other countries and Australia, whilst the cabinet ministers there have pledged all the way back since, well, it's about 25 years now, to serve the people of the Commonwealth of Australia rather than just alone, just specifically the monarch. So it makes great sense to me.
I think I agree with you on that, and I think it's probably an overdue conversation as well. We do often come back to this as an issue, especially when we get something like a new term in Parliament, because there's fresh people in there, there's fresh voices and a bit of an opening to have these conversations. So hopefully it doesn't get too pushed to the side as we kind of roll on with the parliamentary year. But speaking of the big politics... Oh, sorry, what was that?
Yeah, I'd just like to add one other point. Whilst it's important in itself, there is the much bigger picture of constitutional reform. And there's various groups have been working on that and keep working on it. A written constitution is part of that, it being much, much clearer and direct about the treaty's role in that. So I'd like to see it as part of a significant constitutional reform overall.
Now, the National Party has announced its shadow cabinet, and probably the most significant changes, of course, Dr. Shane Reti coming in as the deputy leader, replacing Gerry Brownlee. And this is after Dr. Shane Reti has also lost his seat as well. So it is a significant appointment. What are your thoughts around the lineup on the National Party benches?
First of all, he's an interesting choice as deputy leader, because his reputation is that he's very much a sort of a policy details kind of person rather than a person with very strong political instincts. So for that aspect, the lack of sort of a real fight perhaps for the political side of the job is a surprise. But he's highly thought of by Judith Collins, and so he's got the job. Moving down from there, third and fourth is an interesting duo, because it's Andrew Bailey as Shadow Treasurer and Michael Woodhouse, who's spokesman for finance. Again, referring back to Australia, they do split the role of Treasurer, who's essentially in charge of the architecture and the delivery of revenue, where revenue comes from, where the Minister of Finance is far more about the spending of the money. But in an economy our size, which is very small, that's perfectly possible for one person to do both sides of the job. And I think it's an artificial and not necessarily very helpful to split the job, as it was way back in the late 90s between Bill Birch, and who was Minister of Finance, and Winston Peters, who was Treasurer in the Bolger government. That was a relationship, well, it was complicated because Peters was Peters, and by all accounts, Bailey and Woodhouse get along better. But I think it's less than ideal. And it gets more complicated because Bailey's spokesperson for infrastructure, but Woodhouse is spokesperson for transport. So again, you've got two very closely related subjects, and transport being the biggest part of infrastructure spend, split between two people.
Yeah, it is an interesting one, and I wondered about that as well, actually. I also wanted to touch on something that has been an issue for the National Party across this whole year in terms of losing members and having several leadership changes. We have seen quite a lot of people leaving the party. What do you think this is going to mean for the National Party moving forward? How are they going to, in your opinion, get new recruits on board? Because that's something that political parties always need is, you know, fresh ideas, fresh blood. What do you think is going to be the way that the National Party manages to do this going forward?
Hopefully it will be seen amongst party faithful and people who are sort of drawn to National from a sort of an ideological and sort of natural politics point of view as a place of opportunity in terms of getting involved with the party. And for those who want to become candidates, seek that opportunity. Join some interesting I think, talented young members of the caucus who will be gaining experience during this first term. But that, of course, that tone is very much set by the leader of the party. I would have thought the jury would be somewhat out on the attractiveness that Collins would signal, or more to the point, what sort of style of party she's going to be signaling, given her own personal instincts are to be, words slightly fail me on this one, really quite confrontational, indeed quite inconsistent in how she addresses issues. So we saw her on the campaign trail being very nice one moment and then very ruthless the next. So she sends, just from a character point of view, she sends very mixed signals, which I think is going to be a negative in terms of drawing a range of really good young people to the party in the short term.
Let's talk about climate change, which is the topic that will never go away because it's the world we live in at the moment. The Climate Commission has been knocking around for a little bit now, but they're starting public outreach. What does this mean, and what's it going to mean for the next year? Because it's quite a crucial year.
This is an incredibly big year coming up. By February 1st, it will be releasing its carbon budgets. So the sum total of emissions that we will be trying to make in 3 5-year periods, and then each of those budgets would be smaller than the one before. So that's to get us on the pathway to a low emissions economy. So that looks out about 15 years to 2035. Alongside that, with that, are proposals for sector pathways and sector strategies. And this isn't descriptive policy. It's trying to lay out for government what sort of choices it could make. Then, crucially, there's a period of public submission, 6 weeks, and I'm urging everybody to take a keen interest and put in submissions. And indeed, the Commission is welcoming that, and hence its move now to have some public online forums and the rest. And then the government gets the final proposal from the Commission in May, and then has until the end of December, under our Zero Carbon Act legislation, to come up with the commitments it's prepared to make. At the same time, in the first 2 weeks of November next year, we've got the next UN climate negotiations in Glasgow, COP26. And the very strong pressure will be on all countries to increase their commitment to reduce emissions. Ours is currently consistent with a 3 degrees rise in temperature, but 1.5 is going to be absolutely the benchmark at Glasgow. The UK hosts have made that very clear, and that's the whole mood of the UN. And so New Zealand's going to have a big rethink about the commitment we make, and also to make it a very credible rethink. And that's where the Climate Commission's work, the government's response, and COP 26 all fit together next year.
It's going to be a big one. We will be keeping an eye on that very closely. Thank you so much, Rod, for your time this morning. Always a pleasure.
Likewise. Thanks so much.
We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. See you then.
Okay, see you. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Rod.